somebody on back there. Number two, press number two. The fan. Thank you. Okay, just compose your mind, develop the faith, sada and virya, then we will start the official puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Guan Sing Pusa. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Ami Tho Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Mila Pho. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pusien Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava. Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Okay, turn to our new chanting book. In front of you is a copy of the first revised edition, dated 1st January 2016, beginning of this year. So this one is a slightly different format which has been revised upon and is an improvement over what we had earlier on. So turn to page 1. We will continue from our Vandana homage. Now we will chant the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapada samadhiyami. Musavada viramani sikkhapada samadhiyami. Suramiraya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapada samadhiyami. Okay, now we will chant the Padipa Puja, which is the offering of light. Ganna sarapaditena dipena tamadangsina ติโลกาติปังสัมบุตังปูจายามิตโมนุดังกันดาสัมบรยุตินะโดเปนะหังสุกังหินะปูจายะปูจานิยังตังปูจาบาจานะมุตตมังวันนะกันดากุณโณเปตังเอตังกุสุมาสันทตินปูจายามิมุนินดาสสิริปาดาสารโรเหปูเจมิบุตังกุสุเมนะเนนะปุณเณนะมะเตนะเจโหตุโมคังปูปังมิลายัตติยัตตาอิดังเมกายโยตตายัตติวินาสบาวังอาดิวาเสตุโนบันเตปานิยังปริกาปิทังอนุกัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสตุโนบันเตปาเลปริกาปิทังอนุกัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมังอาดิวาเสตุโนบันเตโบจานาปริกาปิตังอนุกัมปังอุปาดายะปาติกันหาตุมุตตมัง Okay, now we will recite the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all this puja offering.Understanding the significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed and understanding to dispel all darkness. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma.That cools and doses all the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits.May this offering of fruits remind us of the dana parami of generosity and the fruits of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One.Strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free nibbana. Making of overall aspiration, by the power of all these merits, born of these offerings,May our spiritual faculties of Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas, sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings, exception, especially to those who have the conditions and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, Sadhu.Sadhu. Okay, we will now pay respect to Tripaja. Badang Pujemi. Damang Pujemi. Sanghang Pujemi.Okay, Now you can relax yourself, maintain some form of attention. Then we can start our meditation. I will get them to off the light. Then I will try to give some simple basic instruction to those who are new or who need instruction. For those who know how to meditate, you can straight away start your meditation. And for those who still need to train your mind, you can start develop the training of your mind. The training of the mind can be done using the mind sweeping method, combining with metta. So it will help you to train your mind to be within the moment, to feel, not to think. This process, the mind sweeping method, will bring about the transformation from a heedless way where the mental hindrances are very strong to develop a heedful mind which is quiet and more peaceful, so that it can help you overcome the five mental hindrances. It will also at the same time decondition your heedless thinking, because now you feel, you don't think. I will give you the instruction after this. Then after that, you need to anchor this mind that you have trained, so that you can stabilize the quiet mind, the silent mind, the peaceful mind, and that is the meditative mind. But for those who already developed their spiritual faculty, your mental hindrances are already very little or not so active anymore. You can straight away develop the meditation. You can just relax and silence your mind. Then you can meditate straight away. Because when your spiritual faculties are there, your faith in the Buddha and his teaching, Sadha, leading to Virya, they are there very strong. And that mind become very calm and very composed. Then this mind can settle down because there is the deep mindfulness. Then you just relax and aware. Maintain whatever mindfulness training that you are used to. If you are used to training that mind using anapanasati, you can go to anapanasati until it becomes very quiet, very peaceful and very subtle. Then just silence everything. After that, you don't need, technically, you don't need the object of meditation anymore, because your mind is already in sati, so you don't have to develop the anchoring and training of the mind to stabilize that mindfulness anymore. You can just silence, and the mindfulness will pick up whatever that is within the form of mind. Then when you silence everything and just relax and silence, you can stay at the heart, or you can stay at whatever place you want to dwell with your mind, so that this mind can stay there until it becomes very stable. For those who are already skillful, you don't have to do anything. You just relax, silent, and the mind will be quiet on its own. That is spacious awareness without a center. Then whatever that arises within your sixth sense door, you can detect them. Then if you want to develop further, you just silent, relax, and stay around your heart area. Just feel, don't think, feel. Then you will detect the gateway on its own. Initially, maybe you will be very sensitive. You can detect whatever vibration or even your heartbeat. Then you stay there. Be with it. Don't think. Don't try to know. Just be with it. Allow it to be. Just mindful. Relax and just aware. Then it will stabilize. Then one day, when the mind becomes so quiet, so peaceful and so still, that tranquility, which is paucity, it will detect the gateway on its own. Then all of your yin and yang energy that you have developed through the meditation, they will start to melt inside. Then during that time, your mind becomes very quiet, very still, and it's like very soothing, and you feel very good. That is the beginning of real meditation. Then you have to arise the four support during that time. the four support for mindfulness-based meditation. The first support is relax. Relax into every mind state that arises. Then maintain awareness. Don't try to know. Then stay there for as long as you can. Then finally is trust. Trust means no thought involved. Don't try to do anything. Trust the nature to meditate on its own. The silent mind will be able to develop its own meditation and movement. When it detects the gateway, it will know what to do. Then all of the energy that flow into it will become pure energy after it passed through the gateway. Then the internal transformation, they will happen on their own. Okay, this is for those who already know how to meditate. For those who are new, I will give you some basic, simple instruction. For detail, you have to go back and read the blue book. Understanding the meditation as taught by the Buddha, dated 12 September 2013, that transcript. Then there's another also blue book, the recent one. Important meditation instruction to understand the meditation as taught by the Buddha. This one also a very good book. So you go and read through these two books, you will understand. Basically is to develop the training of the mind to be peaceful, to be calm, to be aware within, without thought. So I will go through quickly the Mind Sweeping Method. Relax body and mind. Make sure you have a stable posture. Check your backbone straight. Then breathe in, breathe out normally. Then just maintain awareness or attentiveness to feel your head, your forehead. Feel, don't think, just feel. Wherever there is any tension, tightness or stress within, you just relax, relax and relax every part of it. Feel it soothingly, relax. Then you move your attention down to your eye muscle to the same. Feel, relax. Then your facial muscle to the same. Feel, relax. Then in order to assist you to relax further, you can visualize yourself facing a mirror, radiating a radiant smile. When you can smile, you have joy. When there is joy, there is happiness. The mind is relaxed. And through that, your facial muscle too will relax on its own. Then you just feel it suddenly relax. Then you radiate metta or loving kindness to develop inner well-being. The inner peace leading to inner well-being is a very important first stage of meditation. When you do the mind sweeping method, your mind will become more and more peaceful, more and more quiet. Then you radiate metta to develop inner well-being by reciting what I recite. May I, this body and mind of mine, be well and happy, well and happy, free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May it too be free from all harm and danger. May its mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled. May it keep itself happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within our hearts. Then you can extend this metta towards your loved one. May all my loved ones, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful, without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may their mind states too be well and happy always. May their mind too be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering. May they all too be free from all harm and danger. May there be love. May there be peace and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we extend this metta to all beings. May all beings within this vicinity of SS2, all Dhamma protectors, all devas, nagas and of mighty powers, and all Kayanamitas who are meditating together with us, may they all to be well, happy and peaceful. May their mind states to be free from all suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May they all to be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. Then we can extend this same metta to all beings within the whole of SS2 Petaling Jaya, Selangor, Malaysia, Southeast Asia, Asia, our planet Mother Earth, then our whole solar system, our galaxy, the Milky Way, then extending to the whole universe. May all beings within the entire existence, known and unknown, seen and unseen, may they all too be well, happy and peaceful. May they all too be free from all forms of suffering, both physical and mental suffering, free from all harm and danger. May their mind states too be without enmity, without ill will and untroubled, and may they keep themselves happy and peaceful always. May there be love, may there be peace, and may there be joy deep within their hearts. By now, you should be more calm and more peaceful. You can bring back your mind to feel the facial muscle. Just feel silent everything and just feel relax, relax and relax. Then you move your attention to your shoulder, your neck, back to shoulder, hand, back to shoulder. Feel and just relax. Then move your attention down to your heart area. This is a very important location within your physical form. This is where your heartbeat arises and passes away. This is where your life force arises and passes away. This is where the seat of consciousness arises and passes away. So you just silence everything, relax and feel. Then think, feel. You can detect any vibration or your heartbeat, you just silence everything and just stay there. Don't try to know, just be with it, the awareness. If you are new, you cannot feel, it's okay. You just relax every part within. Just like you feel your forehead, you feel it soothingly. Relax, relax and relax. Then you move your attention down, you sweep it down to your stomach, feel. Silence your mind, just feel, then relax. Then move it down to your abdomen, feel. Then relax. Then move it down to your buttock and your leg, feel. Relax every part. Then you can reverse this whole mind sweeping method from the leg back to your forehead. Just feel and relax, feel and relax. Yeah. By now you should be more calm and more peaceful. Yeah. Then you can actually develop the stability of that trained mind, which is more peaceful, more calm. You can use anapanasati, or mindfulness of the in and out breath, to stabilize this quiet mind. This silent mind. Just like you feel your forehead, now you feel your breathing. Maintain attention in front of your nostril to feel your breathing. Then like the Buddha said, breathing in, your mind is aware. Breathing out, the mind is aware. When you silence everything and feel, the moment the mind detects the breathing, the mind and the breathing move as one, in perfect harmony and synchrony. And that is anapanasati. So you continue to train. Every time the mind wanders off, you bring it back. If you are new, this exercise may take a while. But if you are patient, anapanasati, mindfulness of this in and out breath, can be stabilized, can be developed quite easily. So I will leave it to you to train. Then as you meditate, if you are patient enough, when anapanasati develops, you will feel very peaceful, very calm. Your mind is very different. There is awareness of this in and out breath without thought. Then pity will arise. Pity is a spiritual joy, spiritual rapture, or meditative peace, the inner peace, leading to the inner well-being, pity. Then you relax into every mind state that arises, no matter how strong that pity is, you just relax into it. After a while, this pity will also transform to become more refined. Then you will be able to experience pasati. Sorry. Initially, before pasati, you will experience sukha. Sukha is a very blissful type of mind state. When piti become very, very refined, you will transform into blissfulness, or what they call sukha. So when the mind experience bliss, it is very calm, very blissful, and very soothing. The mind state is very beautiful, and you will like it. But do not attach to this state. You can experience it. You can allow it to manifest. And you silence everything to just observe what happens. When you relax into it, you do not attach and cling and expect it to arise again. Then your mind will be at peace. Because all these are conditioned arising state. When you know how to meditate, when you meditate appropriately, correctly, the condition will arise. And when the condition arises, your mind will be peaceful, calm. You will experience piti and sukha very naturally. Then you continue to relax into it and silence everything. Then your breathing will transform from the very well-regulated mindfulness of the in and out breath. Initially, it will develop long breath, long breathing. Then you will experience a lot of clarity within that breath, that goes in and go out. Then this long breath, later on when it stabilizes, it will start to slow down. Slow down until it becomes very, very subtle, very quiet, like no more breathing. This is the state where you are trying to realize through the training. When it hit that silent mind, quiet mind, tranquility or stillness of mind, when the mind is completely quiet without thought, and that is the meditative mind. That is what the Buddha called pasati, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind. This is the mind that can meditate and develop a lot of understanding and wisdom. Okay, I will let you continue with your meditation. Then I will ring the bell in about 10 minutes. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who had enough, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner awareness, inner mindfulness, and inner peace and inner calmness that you have developed for as long as you can. These are the mind state that you need to develop the meditation in daily life. You have to carry forth this trained mind state to live your daily life and to develop the meditation. The Buddha called it heedfulness or mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action or movement and thought process in the present moment. We call this the daily mindfulness, sati sampajana. The actual real meditation is life itself. It's only when you can be in this state of mindfulness, awareness. The Buddha defined it as heedfulness. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful to develop the meditation as taught by him, which is the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path. Because when you do that, it will lead to the end of all suffering. It will lead to the enlightenment and the awakening. Okay, now we will continue with our invocation to the devas. I will recite the English translation. In this universe, in the entirety, you can turn to page 6, the new chanting book is page 6. In this universe, in the entirety, let the deities or the devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which gives heaven and release Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. This is the time to listen to the doctrine. Samanta Chakavalisu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhaman Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadang Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Svanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Samma Sambuddho Vija Charana Sampanno Sugato Lokavido Anuttaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manusanang Buddho Bhagavati Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipaseko Opanayiko Pachatang Veditatbo Vinohiti Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Nyayapatipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang chattari purisa yukkani Atta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sanggo Huneyo pahuneyo dakineyo Anjali karaniyo Anuttarang punyaketang lokasati Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let's pay respect to Triple Jump. Bedang pucimi. Damang pucimi. Sanghang pucimi. Okay. You can be seated. Relax yourself. Maintain some form of attention. Then we will start off with our second session. Okay, anybody wants to report their meditation or ask any question regarding the meditation or the Dhamma, you can. Yeah? Anybody? Yeah. Make full use of this session so that you can learn. Whatever you're not sure, you can ask. Okay? Anybody? As you sure don't have. Okay, don't have. Maybe today I will share something with you all. This is a J. Krishnamurti quote, which is very good. I think we have done it before. But I so happened to actually rediscover it. It was within one of my chanting books. This Krishnamurti quote is about our thought. During the early days, I used to ask you all this question. Is there a thinker behind the thought? So if you can understand that through your meditation, then I rejoice. And there is a very good way to develop the wisdom to understand yourself. Krishnamurti used the word thought, but the Buddha actually subdivided it into the five mental aggregates of form and mind. That's why within your thought process, every moment of sense experience, when you see something, hear something, smell something, taste something, or tactilely feel something, or when you arise a thought, the Buddha said that thought consists of your five mental aggregates of form and mind. As we have develop the understanding earlier on. You read through the Heart Sutta book, you will know. There are two aspects to the living being or the human being. And for living beings who are deluded, who don't have the wisdom, they thought this so-called human being, which the Buddha called the five aggregate of form and mind, is what they are. That's where the delusion is. If you look at the whiteboard, maybe I go it through. I will go through it one more time. We have covered this before. But for the benefits of those who are new, may not be familiar, I will explain one more time. This second part, maybe I will rub it off. Okay. Let's say This one is the human being, or the living being. So we as human, we call it the human being. But for those who are born as non-human, they are called living beings, even the animals, whatever other type of living beings, the fishes, all those have life. They are called living beings. Then for humans, we call them human beings. So the Buddha defined this human being as two parts. First part is there is a physical body. This is what he called physical form. So this is your form. Then he said you have another part, which is the mental, the mind. So this mind got four more aggregates. This mind, if you want to understand them, you will have to inquire, what can your mind do? What can your mind do? You have been using your mind since birth until now. What can your mind do? First aggregate is what? Your mind can? Perceive is one of them, but feeling is the first one, because you can feel it, hot or cold, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So the first aggregate of mind, this one is, let's say, the form. Then the first aggregate of mind is our second aggregate, which is feeling. So feeling is one of the aggregate of mind, because the mind has this ability to feel hot or cold, pleasant or unpleasant sex experience. Then it can also, like you said just now, come to know things. So perception is another quality of mind. The mind can perceive through your senses. Perception. The mind can perceive through your senses. Whatever you come to perceive, you can know them through your memory. That's why whatever you see, like the Buddha image, whatever you can hear, like my voice, you can perceive it through your mind. So perception is another quality of mind. The Buddha called it the second aggregate of mind. Then after that, what can your mind do? Throughout the day, you use it. What can your mind do? Thinking. They call it activity of mind or thinking. Or activity of mind. Or mental activity. This one, the third aggregate, the Pali word is very comprehensive. The Buddha called it Sankara. And this word is a very powerful word. It's commonly used. This one, the Pali word is Vedana. For feeling is called Vedana. You don't have to copy. It's all in the Heart Sutta note. You only have to listen attentively. Perception is Sanya. Sankara, actually, the English translation, they try to translate this word. They use 5 to 6 type of English words to express its meaning, but yet it has not given justice to this word. Where this word, when you come to understand through meditation, is very deep in its meaning. That's why the Buddha always used this word Sankara. Sabbe Sankara Anicchang. You heard of this before, right? Sabbe is all. All of Sankara is Anicchang or impermanent, the Buddha said. Then Sabbe Sankara Dukkang. All of Sankara lead to suffering. Then Sabbe Dhamma Anatta. All of the conditioned and unconditioned, they are all non-self, Anatta, empty nature. So this word Sankara is a very, very important Dhamma word. And this is the most important aggregate of mind. In fact, when you understand this one, is what we call the content of consciousness. Sankara is the content of consciousness. Everything that you input into your consciousness, is sankhara. Or whatever that your mind can do is sankhara. Huh? Everything that your mind can do. That your mind can do. Now we go into this. The book, they won't explain. Different place, they use different English word to express the meaning. When it comes to sankhara, the most commonly used word is activity of mind or mental activity. So this mental activity, they didn't explain. In fact, all of your thinking, all of your planning, scheming, deceitfulness, all the movement in the mind, like your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow and your lament, these are all part of sankhara. That's why it is thinking, activity inside the mind. Then because when you start to do that, you experience those mental states. Then they also call sankhara as mental intention or mental volition. Volition is intention. When you arise a mental intention or volition, it's also called sankhara. Then mental states, all of the various mind states, like when you are very peaceful, very calm, very tranquil, very still. These are all mind states. That's why they call it mental formation. It forms the mental states in the mind. Then sometimes your anger, your emotion, your envy, your jealousy, these are all mental states, part of sankhara. So sankhara, the meaning is very deep. In fact, everything that your mind can do is sankhara, including the first two, feeling and perception. That's why it's called the content of consciousness. Whatever that you input into your mental intention, your activity of mind, your mental states, all of your feeling, your perception, your conditioning, your thought process, they are all part of sankhara. Then what else can your mind do? Your mind can do one more thing. What else? What else can your mind do? It can become conscious, isn't it? So consciousness is another what they call aggregate of mind, the last of the aggregate. The mind can become conscious. So consciousness is the last aggregate. There are the five physical senses. Senses plus one mind. These are your six senses. This one can arise. The six types of respective consciousness. That's why as a human being, you have your five senses, physical senses. You have the eye as an organ. That's why you can become conscious of what you see. That's why seeing consciousness can arise. You open your eye. You can become conscious of the whole field of vision if your organ is functioning. So you can see color, shape, and form. This is the power of consciousness. The mind can become conscious of what it sees. Then the mind can become conscious of what it hears through the hearing consciousness, because we have the organ of ear, E-A-R. Then we have this, what they call organ of smell, the nose. That's why we can become conscious of what we smell. Then what we taste through our taste bud, we can become conscious of it. Then how we feel, hot or cold, through our bodily tactile consciousness. Then when there is pain or whatever, you can feel them through your bodily tactile. Then the last one is your thought process. you can become conscious of your thinking. Because thought is an organ. The mind itself is an organ. The mind itself is an organ. So upon contact, thought consciousness can arise. So thought consciousness is actually your thought. The pure consciousness with its content. That's why it becomes conscious of whatever that arises. Yeah. So these are the five aggregates of form and mind. But the first aggregate of form, which the Buddha called Rupa in Pali, this one got two meanings. This one, consciousness, is called Vijnanam. This one, the Pali word is Vijnanam. Vijnana. I think double N or single N, I forgot already. You go and check. Okay. This form, the first aspect as a human being, this is the first aspect of the five aggregates of form and mind. Okay, so this one is relatively easy to understand. The Buddha said, as a human being, you have a physical body. Okay, this part is the first part, physical body. Then you have the consciousness. This one is the consciousness or the mind. Yeah? So this consciousness, he subdivide the conscious mind. Yeah? Conscious mind. Or consciousness. Okay. Mind has the ability to feel, perceive, arise mental activity, mental states, or what we call the content of consciousness. Then it can become conscious of things. So, first aspect as a physical body. Physical body means physical form. Then these two combine, it becomes the five aggregate of form and mind. The Buddha said, you are a human being because you have a physical form and you have a mental aspect which together forms the human being. And this, if you deludedly believe is you, then you will be actually afflicted. All of suffering comes through self-delusion, sakayadhiti. When you deludedly believe this is you, you get yourself entangled. This one, the whole of the five aggregate of form and mind, this one is karmically conditional, through karma for you to come to this world. To live life, to experience life, and to do whatever you want with life. So this is the vehicle you come. Okay? And this one is karmically conditioned. This is not you. But this is the one that is subject to the law of karma. Because it's karmically conditioned, so this is the one that is subject to karma. So this human being is the one that is subject to karma. That's why the Buddha said when he mentioned under the five daily contemplation, the last one, he said we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. We are what we are because of our karma. That one he is referring to this, the human being, which is the whole of this. And this one is not you, understand? But this one is subject to karma, karmically connected to you. This is the vehicle and the tool you come to this world. Then you have to meditate with this to connect back to your true nature, to your true mind, to your eternal nature within. So this is the first aspect. Then the Buddha said the second aspect is second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind is the five mental aggregates of form and mind. This one is the one that the Buddha is more interested in. This is the one that he talked about under the dependent origination teaching, Paticca-samuppada, the dwelling. Under the first aspect, we already clearly understood what this human being is all about. This is the five aggregate of form and mind. Then how did the physical form or external form enters the mind to develop the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind? And this one, the five mental aggregate, is your thought. And this is what Krishnamurti is trying to share with us tonight. This five mental aggregate of form and mind is your thought. Okay, we already know within the thought there is only four aggregates: feeling, perception, activity of mind, thinking, and consciousness. So actually there are only two: consciousness and its content, where these two is included under this one. But then how does the form, the external form, enters the mind? How does the external form enters the mind? Through your aggregate of what? Which aggregate brings the external form into the mind? Yeah? Like this Buddha image or my voice that I speak. How do you come to know it, know about it? Through your what? Perception. Because of your aggregate of perception. Because of this aggregate of perception. This one This one brings the external form into your mind. This is how the five aggregate of form and mind, the mental form, arise. The moment you perceive, how do you know it's a Buddha image? Through your memory, through your aggregate of perception, you perceive it. Then how do you understand my voice? You perceive it through your hearing consciousness. After you become conscious, you are able to perceive it. That's how this sense data, my vibration, the word I speak, these are also external form. So external form are not just physical form, understand? All of your hearing consciousness, sense data, they are also mental form. Then everything that you can smell, the smell sense that you receive, these are also mental form. Then your taste bud, the type of sweetness, sourness, or whatever, various type of taste experiences, they are also mental form. They enters the mind. Then whatever that you can become conscious of through your tactile, they are also mental forms. Then whatever that arise within your content of thinking, they are also mental form. Your visualization, all the mental images that enters your mind, they are also mental forms. So this mental form, together with the four aggregates of mind, they become the five mental aggregates of form and mind. And this one, Krishnamurti call it the thought. He just used one word, thought. But very difficult to understand him. That's why people cannot understand Krishnamurti. And a lot of people study Krishnamurti, they cannot penetrate his teaching. And just like just now, if I don't explain to you this quote, which I have read just now before some of you all came, to those who are early, you will never understand. But the moment I explain with the understanding of what the Buddha has taught, you will become very clear. Then all this has meaning. Then you can understand why the Buddha said, this first aspect of the human being, the form and mind, is not you, anatta, non-self. And why this thought process also, they are not you. This five mental aggregate, the second aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind, we call it the thought, they are also not you. That's why in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Buddha went through all the five aggregates. He asked the monk, he said, is form self? Is feeling self? Is perception, activity of mind or sankhara in consciousness, are they self? If they are self, means what? They will not lead to suffering. But because they are not self, that's why they lead to suffering. Then he asked, are these five aggregates of form and mind permanent? Then you can see through your meditation, there are conditions arising, mental phenomena, physical mental phenomena. They are impermanent because dependent on condition they arise. When conditions cease to be, they cease to be. When condition continue to sustain itself, it like exists, but it is only supported by those conditions. When conditions cease, it's gone, like my voice. The moment I stop speaking into the microphone, you cannot hear anything. That's why this one, you don't say die. You didn't say my voice die. You say no more. Because no more condition for it to arise. This vibration is not magnified through the microphone speaker. That's why you cannot hear it through your hearing consciousness. There is no condition for it to arise. There's a hearing consciousness is condition arising. When there is this sense data, the vibration that hits the eardrum, and your ear as an organ is functioning, then your mind, upon contact, can become conscious of it. Like the physics experiment, upon contact, the light bulb lights up. Lighting up is like your mind becomes conscious of what you arise at the sense, at the respective sense door. If it's the seeing consciousness, then it's the seeing consciousness. If it's at the hearing organ, then it's the hearing consciousness. Smell, taste, tactile, and thought process. So this part, make sure you understand. Yeah. Now we go into the Krishnamurti code. Then it will be easier for you all to develop the understanding. Okay, I read to you all. For those who have been here earlier on, you should have a copy of this Krishnamurti code. It's dated 20th September 2015. It's extracted from his book, Choiceless Awareness. Okay. The inquiry that I always ask is there a thinker behind the thought that living being arise? You try to answer that. Through your meditative experience, what do you think? What do you think? Yes, very good. If there is no thought, there is no thinker. But you have to understand this through the meditation. If you just believe what I say and what Krishnamurti say, you are not going to benefit because that understanding is not there. It's just knowledge. It's just trying to believe. That's why belief, the faith is not strong, the understanding is not there, because you believe. It's not an understanding. You have not awakened to it. You have not realized it. You only heard about it. Then you believe it. That belief is not strong. When it comes to actual confrontation with thought, you cannot cope, you cannot understand. That's why living beings suffer so much. Nowadays, a lot of young people, they already got depression at such a young age. And all because of what? Not understanding thought. It's just a thought. Come and go. How come it has such power to create so much suffering and misery within the living being? It can cause them so much suffering, so much fear, so much phobia, so much anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, sorrow and lamentation, leading to depression. They become so miserable. What makes it possible? Because when you don't understand thought, you cannot cope with life. This five aggregate of form and mind, the second aspect, the Buddha said, which is the thought, you deludedly grasp, cling and hold, then you suffer. You will be afflicted. That's why there is so much suffering in this world, because of the thought. It's just a thought. What is a thought? Arise, pass away. It's just a consciousness, a moment. If you don't give meaning, if you understand its truth and its reality, you will not be deluded by it. That's why the Buddha teach you how to use thought. The use of thought is very important. If you are deluded by it, you don't know how to use thought, then you get yourself entangled and become afflicted. But if you have wisdom, understanding, if you know how to use thought, then thought becomes beautiful. Understand or not? Thought is like money. You know what is money? If you don't understand, you will tend to agree with what people tell you. Money is the source of all evil, root of all evil. You heard about this? Why do they say that? Because they say most people, when they have wealth, when they don't know how to use it, they become a slave to wealth. They get themselves into trouble, entangled. Especially the rich people. Then for those who are married, some of these, after they become very wealthy or well-to-do, the man become naughty. Or sometimes lady too, they become naughty. That because of lust, craving, desire. Then they get themselves entangled. Then they say, money is the root of all evil, source of all downfall. But how can that be the case? To me, it's obviously a wrong conclusion. What is money? Money is neither good or bad, understand? Like your thought, neither right or wrong. But when the user of money is deluded and use it wrongly, then money becomes evil. True or not? Can follow that point or not? Your thought is the same. Karmically conditioned out for you to use that mind. So use it with understanding, with wisdom. The user of thought, like money, is very important. If the user of thought has wisdom, right understanding, then thought become right thought. Thought become beautiful thoughts. Then thought become wholesome. Thought become beautiful. That it serves its purpose. That's why Noble Eightfold Path teach you how to develop the right view, the right understanding, which is the wisdom. When you have this wisdom or right understanding or right view with regards to the law that governs life and existence, then you know how to use thought. That's why from right view, the next path factor is right thought. And thought with its mental intention. If when your thought is right, it will condition the right speech, the right action, and the right way to live your life. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path will fall into place. But when there is no right view, means what? You have wrong view. Means you don't understand. That's why the user of thought becomes deluded. because of the wrong view. So like money, if the use of money is evil, money becomes evil. If the use of thought is deluded, then thought becomes wrong thought, evil thought. That is the root of all evil. That's how suffering arises. That's how affliction arises. So this part is very important. That's why you have to penetrate it. The Buddha said, if you attach to everything that you feel, you want pleasant feeling, you don't want unpleasant feeling, then what will happen to you? Huh? You will have no peace, isn't it? In this world, you cannot be always having this good and happy feeling, understand? Because things will go the way of nature. Even this body, they will get old, get sick, and one day die. You cannot always say, I want to be forever young, don't get sick, don't get old, and don't die. This is against the law of nature. So when you confront all these realities, you don't have wisdom, you attach and cling to all the feeling that arise as this physical body goes through old age, sickness, and death, what will happen? Because you like the good old feeling, the pleasant feeling that arise when you are healthy, when you are young, when you have all the senses working very well for you. But as you get old, what happens? Your senses starts to fail you. Your physical body starts to fail you. Your organs starts to give you problem. That's why you experience sickness, death, injury, and all those things. Then you confront death, impending death. If you are deluded and you don't understand, you cling, you grasp, allow your thought to project, then you have fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. Then you cannot cope with life. You cannot accept what happened. You become afflicted. You become miserable. This is the real teaching. This is the Dhamma. So, deludedly clinging to all these aggregates of mind, which the Buddha has already explained, will give rise to suffering. The first aggregate feeling I already explained, because you like pleasant feeling, you don't like unpleasant feeling. If you do that, you will have problem because you don't know how to accept the reality of the moment. You don't know how to develop the understanding of the reality of this physical body that will go the way of nature. We are in this world. You are not the only living being that exists. Every living being that has a physical body and a mind, they have to experience the same reality of this form. This form has to go the way of nature. It's of the nature to decay, to grow old, to get sick and one day die, for he has not gone beyond old age, sickness, and death. That's why these are the three daily contemplation that you have to contemplate and reflect every day, the Buddha said, so that you are not deluded by this physical body thinking that it's you, because this one is made up of element, no knowing, cannot be you. And because it's element, it goes the way of nature. That's why you cannot deludedly grabs and cling and hold and want it otherwise, because it goes the way of nature. It will decay, it will go through what they call transformation. Like a baby, when you are born into this world, you grew into a boy, then into a youth, then you plateau off and become a middle age, maybe person. Then later on you grow old. That's why they call you uncle, auntie, then grandpa, granny, akong, ama. First is uncle, auntie, then akong, ama, then chokong. Then finally no more name. They erase you all. So all this part and parcel of the human perception of what this form of mind is. If we think this is what we are, then we identify with the external physical form, then we develop delusion. Then when we look at this form getting old, getting sick and die, we thought we are this form, that's why we suffer. then we cling and attach to all the feeling that arise. If we don't have wisdom to be at peace with whatever that arise, we will suffer. Because you have your craving, your desire. You want good, happy feeling. You don't want all those unhappy feeling, unpleasant feeling. Then whenever you perceive through your perception, like your loved ones, things that you own, your car, your property, your wealth, your career, your businesses, your title, your reputation, your credential, your professional status and all those things. If you deludedly believe this belongs to you, when separation arises, when conditions change, when things no longer used to be what it is. So separation can happen through death, or through relationship failure, or through what they call nature's disaster, or economic crisis during war, earthquake, or what they call nature's disaster. Then you can be separated from your loved ones. So when that happens, if you have attachment, craving, clinging, grasping, what will happen? You become afflicted, you become miserable. That's why you attach to all your feeling, what you perceive, to all your views and opinion and your conditioning. You attach to your mental identification with your own physical body, your name, your reputation, your whatever entity as a Chinese, as a race or a nationality or this. You create mental conflict. That's how you suffer. You will enter into argument. You will become afflicted by what people say. So all this is delusion. When you think this thought, the aggregates, they belong to you. Then whatever you become conscious of, like through your seeing and your hearing. Nowadays, you can actually experience a lot of this beautiful TV program, or even internet video and other things. They say sight and sound, the title. All of the beautiful sight and sound that you can experience through your senses. They are so beautiful. But human being is very funny, very strange. They didn't know that life can become so beautiful. Instead of experiencing all this, what they call beauties and wonders of life, they go and make themselves miserable over thinking over negative things, fearful things, sad things, sorrowful things, because they say this is my problem. Then they hold on to it, grasp onto it, cling onto it, worry about it, become miserable over it. And they thought that is what life is all about. Because to them, if that problem is not solved, there is no life. And that is what suffering is all about. Human beings' problem is, you cannot understand. The moment you cling and hold, deludedly grasp, you become entangled. Your mind cannot free. That's how suffering can get its way into living beings' mind. So Krishnamurti's quote is very important. Okay? So now we understand the first part. Like what Alicia said, without thought, there is no thinker. So the thinker creates the thought. But you have to find out through the meditation. You cannot just believe it as a knowledge. It is not going to help you. Now I will read on. Krishnamurti's title is different. He said, it is thought that creates the thinker. That's why you have to inquire deep whether to believe him or investigate into your own mind and develop the understanding so that you can develop the confirmation that Krishnamurti is right. According to J. Krishnamurti, he said, thought and the thinker are one. Exactly like what Alicia told you. Without thought, there is no thinker. So the thought and the thinker are one. It's just the thought. Understand or not? You know what is thought or not? The five mental aggregates of form and mind. The physical experiment, you can remember? I better draw it out over here. So this is positive, this is negative. This is the battery, yeah? Battery. Yeah. Or the power source, yeah? Or the consciousness. So this is the contact. So this is a switch, yeah? That make contact. Upon contact, what happened? Yeah? If the battery is working, this light bulb will light up, isn't it? Correct or not? Yeah. So this one is a nature's process. It's part of the nature's law. So this one, the light bulb, is like your organ. Let's say your eye, E-Y-E, huh? Or your ear. So what happens is, upon contact of the mind with the organ, then you become conscious, just like this light bulb. Conscious of what you see, if it is, you make contact with the eye as an organ. If you make contact with the ear as an organ, then it is the hearing consciousness. The lighting up is like you become conscious of what you hear, or you become conscious of what you see. So this is a nature's process, correct or not? You don't need God to create seeing or hearing. Can you understand that? Condition arising. That's why the Buddha said, when we deludedly say, I see, this capital I, when you say I, S-E-E-C, okay, who is this I? Who is this I? Huh? Huh? Your I. So she say, your I. Logical, huh? Logical or not? Without I, you cannot see then. Yeah? Logical or not? So is this I that you say, your I, E-Y-E? Can or not? Possible or not? You go and check. A dead man with the eye, yeah, you open. Can the dead man see? Their eye alone cannot see, correct or not? So it is not the eye that is responsible for seeing. If it's not the eye that see, then what else see? Oh, you say consciousness, then we change. Huh? We know. This one, the mind, yeah? You say the consciousness or the mind see. Or the mind see. Again, very logical. Yeah. No mind cannot see. Yeah? Agree or not? Agree, yeah? I ask you one more question. A blind man. He is conscious, isn't it? He got mind, isn't it? You ask him to see. That's why mind alone, consciousness alone cannot see. I alone also cannot see. So seeing consciousness come from where? When the condition of all these three are there, then only it arises. Understand? You must have the organ which is functioning. You must have the mind that is conscious within the body. Then there must be contact. These three are the condition for it to arise. Understand? That's why there is no I. The Buddha said everything is dependent originating. Without condition, nothing arises. And this I is fictitious. This one is for us to communicate. Understand? To communicate. But it has its limitation. That's why you must not be deluded by it. And this is not you. Understand? We have gone through. So that's why the Buddha said this is condition arising. There is no one inside there to see. Seeing consciousness or hearing consciousness can only arise when the organ is there, when the mind is there, together with the life force. Means the three condition. Just like your first aspect, the five aggregate of form and mind, this human being. Is it a permanent, unchanging entity? Is it you? This one can only exist when the three conditions that support its existence is there. Understand now? What are the three conditions? First, your physical body must be in proper health. Understand now? Can sustain this consciousness. Like your organ is functioning. Then this consciousness can create consciousness of that organ. Then likewise, for the brain to function, to arise thought consciousness, this brain must not be damaged. That's why people go into coma, become unconscious, is because the brain developed problem. Then when the spinal cord snap, when they hang you, or when you commit suicide, or when there's a severe accident, major organ damage, liver or what, then this physical body cannot support the consciousness. Then what happened? The consciousness will have to leave. That's how you say, die. It's not die. Nothing die. It's the separation of condition. So the three things that maintain this human being's ability to exist are the three important vital conditions. First, there must be a physical body that is still functioning. Okay? So this is functioning. Then there must be this consciousness that is still inside. Not haven't left. Then the third one is what? The third one is the most important one. Is what? Your karmic force. Understand? Karmic or life force. Life force or karmic force that pound your heart, understand? That maintain your heartbeat. This one you inherit from your karmic nature. Oh, I rub off already. The karmic nature supply your form and mind with this karmic force or life force. That's why your heart continue to pump and beat. And when this life force ceases, this form and mind will separate because the heart will stop. Unless they put it on artificial. Now the doctor can. They put in a pacer that they can actually suspend your heart with a machine. Then they use that to pump. And then it can maintain life. It can maintain life. Like those they call vegetable or what. They are not conscious, but they are not dead. Medically, they are not dead because the heart is pumping. Because they sustain it. And it's costing you a lot of money to be in the ICU, to be sustained in that way. So these three conditions, once they are there, then this human being exists. That's why this one is not a permanent, unchanging entity. It's not you. Just like the seeing consciousness, the moment this one is any of the three conditions, no more, this human being ceases to be. That's why the Buddha said these are conditioned arising entity. When the conditions are there for it to exist, means the supporting condition sustain itself, means continue to exist, then this form and mind, first aspect as a human being, is like real. Animate into a human being, like alive. Then you say, this one is you, alive. And most people are trapped in this because how can you deny that this is not you? Most living beings will tell you this. If I want to jump, I can jump. I want to walk, I can walk. I want to do whatever with this form and mind, I can. Why you say not me? Even if you want to commit suicide, I can. I want to laugh, I laugh. I want to joke, I joke. Why you say this one not me? When you meditate into it, then you understand. Even without meditation, through your contemplation, you will understand. Let's say, if he say, this body belong to him. He say he want to run, he can run. Correct not? So our analogy is like a car and a driver. Ability to control and maneuver that car doesn't mean the car belong to the driver. Correct not? True or not? The car is the car, the driver is the driver. Understand? Because the car is being designed for certain purpose. So if the driver understand and can control that car, doesn't mean the car is the driver. You can see very clearly that the driver is the driver, the car is the car. So likewise, the consciousness that control this physical body, that tell it to walk and move, is different from the physical body. Correct not? So like the car, when there is no more petrol, or any of the major part is damaged, what happened to the car? It cannot run anymore. Formula One driver also no use. Understand? Then what happened? Like this physical body, let's say paralyzed from the waist down. You ask the fellow to walk, and say, it refused to walk. Understand? Because it's no longer functioning. That's why it's not you. When the conditions are there for it to function as a human being, that is like you exist. Like this is you, real. That's why this one is beyond your control. It's condition arising, causal phenomena, not you. That's why the Buddha said this is not you. Karmically conditioned out, vehicle and a tool for you to come to this world, to live, to experience all of the beauty and wonders of life, to develop the cultivation, the understanding. Then to understand that how they are all connected with the law of karma. There is a karmic nature, there is a spiritual nature, and how you develop the meditation to connect. And these are the important understanding that you have to develop through the teaching. Okay? Now we will go on. Wow, so fast, 10 o'clock already. Okay, I have to finish this good. So with this background, it's very easy now. Now I read. Thought and the thinker are one. But it is thought that creates the thinker. You have to meditate into it. When your mind is very quiet, peaceful and silent, then you can experience this reality. You can understand what thought is. Thought is just a conscious moment. And what is thought? You have to find out. Respond to memory. If there is no memory, there is no thought. That's why the newborn baby got no thought. No perception also, because there is no memory, no conditioning. They are not taught anything. They are just very, very simple, very naive. They are just arising the pure consciousness. Okay, then I read on. Thought and the thinker are one. But it is thought that creates the thinker. And without thought, there is no thinker. Exactly like what Alicia shared with us. So one has to be aware of the process of conditioning. This is very important. How the mind, the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the conditionalizing mind, how it get itself conditioned into what it is. Like your views, your opinion about life, your traditional belief, your racial identity, your religious belief system, all this mold you, condition you, your education system, everything that you went through in life have a role in what you are. That's why they condition you and make you what you are. Then from there, you identify with your bundle of memory and conditioning. Then you identify your physical appearances, the name that people give to you. Then you think you are that, so and so. Then you identify the external physical form, the gender, the race, everything come from that physical form, form identification. And when you cannot see form, you cannot understand the mind, because if you cannot see form, you cannot see mind. Form is very gross. Mind is very, very elusive because it's non-physical, cannot be perceived directly. It can only be perceived via the silent mind, awareness of it. So one has to be aware of the process of conditioning, which is the thought itself. And when there is an awareness of that process without choice, means you don't stir your mind to react to it, to complain, to judge, to do all those funny things. When there is no sense of resistance, means no egoic mind to fight, to become a part of what that thought process is. When there is neither condemnation nor justification of what is being observed, then we see that the mind is the center of all conflict, because this is the one that develops the wrong view, the conditioning. That's why it's egoic. That's why the five aggregates of form and mind, they have the universal characteristics of impermanence. The moment you grasp clinging and hold, suffering will arise. And because they are impermanent, it is not a permanent unchanging entity where you can hold on to, grasp on to, and cling on to, and say, this is me, this is I, therefore all this can be mine. So all this, you have to see very clearly. Then when you see that the mind is the center of all conflict, in the understanding of this mind and the way of the mind, the conscious as well as the unconscious, even through your dreams, through every word you arise, through every thought process or process of thought and action, the mind become extraordinarily quiet. This is the meditation. When you start to be silent, not react to it, when you start to take an impersonal view towards all this, means as a silent observer of what is, of the reality, when thought does not arise, then this mundane mind ceases to be. Then it loses its power to delude you, to condition you, and make you miserable. Then what happens is, all of a sudden, without thought, your nature shines forth. This mind becomes extraordinarily quiet. And that tranquility of mind is the beginning of wisdom. That's why you have to meditate until the mind becomes very quiet, still, and silent. But not make silent through concentration. Understand or not? It's not a conditioned state. It's a natural state. It becomes extraordinarily quiet, still, and silent on its own through an understanding, not through delusion, not through energy field, not through thought-based meditation, not through concentration. That's why Krishnamurti said, when you understand all this, your mind will become extraordinarily quiet. And that tranquility of mind is the beginning of wisdom, because wisdom cannot be bought. You cannot use money and buy wisdom. Bertil, I give you 1 million, you give me wisdom. Cannot. Then wisdom also cannot be learned. That's why I told you, it's not a knowledge where you can learn them. Understand or not? You can learn to be clever, cunning, but you cannot learn to become wise. Because wisdom is not a knowledge. Wisdom is an understanding. The understanding is not rigid, applied to all conditions. Not when things are like that, you might act like that. No such thing. If it's a rigid thing, it's just acting based on knowledge. It's not based on wisdom. And this part is very important. And that tranquility of the mind is the beginning of wisdom. Wisdom cannot be bought. It cannot be learned. It comes into being only when the mind is quiet, utterly quiet. Not make still or quiet by compulsion, coercion, or discipline. Discipline is the concentration, the noting and all those things, the one-pointedness and all those things. Means you discipline it, you force it into energy field, one-pointedness, absorption and all those things. Only when the mind is spontaneously silent, spontaneously means without thinking, understand not, on its own, without any concentration or energy field, on its own, it is spontaneously silent. Is it possible to understand that is that which is beyond time, beyond thought? And this is the awakening. This is the direct seeing. This is what the Buddha called insight. I-N-S-I-G-H-T, not I-N-S-I-D-E. Insight is wisdom. When you insight into the characteristics of nature, you develop understanding of its universal characteristics or impermanent suffering state, leading to the non-self or empty nature. That's why the three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta, they are very important and very profound. If you can awaken to it, you will become enlightened. Okay, we finish. You got any question? We still got 20 minutes. Enough time to do a little bit of Diamond Sutta. You got any question so far about this? Well, this is a very important understanding. I want to teach this before the retreat. Because as we go through the retreat, your first Heart Sutta notes, the first chapter is the five aggregate of form and mind. I have to start from there. Because the Heart Sutta centered on the five aggregate of form and mind. The beginning statement of the Heart Sutta, Quan Zi Zai Pu Sa, when Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva was cultivating the Prajna Paramita Sutta, he illuminated the five skandhas, which is the five aggregate of form and mind, and realized that they were all empty. That's how it came about. So if you can't even understand what this five aggregate of form and mind is, then how can you put to test what Kuan Yin Bodhisattva or Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva has realized? You cannot. That's why this five aggregate of form and mind is very important. And this one you cannot find in any book. Nobody can teach you. They mention about it, but he cannot explain what this thing is. Okay, we turn on to our Diamond Sutta. We will continue from where we stopped. We were at page 55, I think. 54 or 55? 55, okay. If you remember what you have given, then I will forget it. If you can forget it, then I will keep it in mind. It is the same with the Buddha, who, knowing the mind of all living beings, is aware that you have not forgotten the merits and virtue of your giving, your act of giving. And so he finds it unnecessary to remind them himself. When you forget them, the Buddha remembers. Do you think it is better for you or the Buddha to remember? This one is just Chen Hua's way of putting it. Not important. You think I'm afraid that if I forgot, the Buddha will forget too. And then I simply will not have any merit at all. This one is all foolish thinking. Because all this depends on your mental intention when you perform a merit. If your mental intention is tinted with the evil roots, then they are not pure merits. Then this style of giving is limited. And you don't have to worry whether Buddha remember or not, because nature's law got nothing to do with whether Buddha remember what you do or don't remember what you do. It's all recorded in nature's law. We go on. Never fear. If you forget about your act of giving, the Buddha will eternally remember them. As to say later in the Vajra Sutta, all the various thoughts which occurs to all living beings are completely known to the Tathagata. So this one, what he is trying to tell you is the Tathagata is not what they call a human being or an entity which you believe, a Buddha. Because the real Tathagata is that nature, the oneness nature, which is the source of all things. That's why it's all recorded. When you do good things, you remember them. But when you do bad, do you also cherish the memory? No, you try to forget your offenses immediately. Yet you fondly ponder the good you have done. You should forget the good and remember the bad. Why remember the bad? So you will not do it again. Why forget the good? So that you will feel the need to do more. This is Son Hoa's version. The way I understand it is different. Like Quang Ching Lao He Sang. How many of you don't know Mandarin? Oh, only one or two. So many. Banana one. I will try to explain. There is one old monk, he said, 对也接受，不对也接受。 无论如何都要忍辱，忍辱就是波罗蜜。 So the meaning is, right also accept, wrong also accept. No matter what happens, is it, you have to maintain equanimity of mind. Means real patience born of wisdom, equanimity of mind. Because equanimity of mind, which is patience with wisdom, is a paramita. Is a real paramita. So when you understand that, you don't argue with people anymore. Understand? You don't say you are right, you are wrong. You go beyond duality. Then what is more important is, whatever you do, don't try to be right. Don't try to think whether it's meritorious or not meritorious. I should not have done. I should have done it otherwise. I should have whatever, whatever. You know what Quang Ching Lao Sang say or not? 做完了就没事了. Understand? Whatever you have done, the moment it's finished, no more problem. 没事了. Understand? Why do you want to go and think about it and worry about it? Ayo, I shouldn't have done it. Then, remorse. Understand? I should have done more. If I had known that he is the enlightened one, I would have paid respect more. I would have offered more. All these are foolish thinking. The moment when you are there, the condition is there, you don't have that nature to understand, that's it. Finish. Everything is what? Your thought. Recall. And thought is not real. Understand? The reality is the here and the now, that moment. After that moment is dead and gone. That's why he said, you don't want to have any attachment to your thought process, which is egoic and deluded. Where that thought is conditioned, understand? He will have his own way of perceiving things, right and wrong according to you. And just because somebody told you, why are you so stupid? You know who that guy is or not? Then you have a lot of remorse. Then you meet another fellow, he tell you the opposite. Well, luckily you avoid him, otherwise you die. Then how you feel? Then you have made the offering, you feel very stupid. How come your mind can be affected by what people tell you and what people say? Because you don't understand the reality is within the moment. At that moment, how you manifest, that is more important. After that, it's no more reality. Understand? It's just like you come back and project your thought. Then you go and worry. For what? Because it's no more a reality. Understand? Like I used to tell you, the future has yet to come. It's not a reality. Not when it arrives. Don't even worry about it. Understand? Because it may not happen. Because it's not a reality. The reality is the here and the now. What are you doing now? Moment to moment, life passes by. Are you aware of the moment? Are you heedful? Are you mindful? Are you with the moment to understand life, to experience all of the beauties and wonders of life? Or are you worrying about life within the moment? That's how you become miserable, suffer, afflicted. Life is to be understood and met with within the moment. That's why the Mandarin got one saying very good. When you hit the point of problem, then they say what? The boat. They will know how to sail accordingly. Oh, I learned a new verse. So that is a very good saying, you know. When you come to the point of decision, if you have wisdom, you will know how to make the decision. If you don't have wisdom, then what happened? You got doubt. Then what you do? Ayo, die lah. What to do? Go or not to go? Do or not to do? Accept or not to accept? Who is saying all those things? Your thought, which is deluded. Understand? That's why trust your nature, feel whatever your nature feel, that is the real one. Understand? Whatever that you project through your thought that create fear is not the real one. That is the conditioned state. When you are fearful, what happens? You have the mental hindrance. You have the evil root of fear, born of delusion. Then you are like paralyzed. Then you cannot move. You don't have wisdom. You don't have understanding. You're supposed to cultivate the Buddha Dhamma. You're supposed to have faith in the Triple Gem, the Buddha Dhamma and the Sangha. When you have faith in this, you don't worry anymore. Understand? If you have lived your life accordingly, avoid all evil, do good, and purify your mind. Your karmic nature is beautiful. That's why you take care of mind. Mind take care of karma. Karma take care of you. You don't have to worry about life. Whatever will be, will be. If you believe in your nature, if you have not done the wrong thing, things will go your way. But if you do all sorts of funny things, deluded things, heedless things, then nothing can help you. Even God also cannot help you. Understand? God is also subject to the law of nature. That's why when it comes to reality, you see 911, we went through before. Which God is more powerful during 911? They say the Christian God, almighty, all-knowing, but sleeping, doesn't know that it will happen. That's why that Larry King, he said, this round, the Muslim God won. Because he said, if my God is a Christian God, is almighty, he can stop all this. He's almighty, he should know. But he said, God also cannot. Then the other third guy, like he best, he said, appear to me that there are more than two gods. So when you don't understand, you attribute to God. When you understand, everything is within the ability to comprehend. These are nature's law, nothing else. If you look at the world, look at what you are now, look at everything that you come to experience in this world or this universe of ours, is there anything that is being created? Are you being created? You can never deny that you need a father and mother, sperm, then only the birth process. That everything to me, I saw it coming out naturally through a nature's process. Nothing is created. Even my thought process, my mind, my consciousness, everything follow nature's law. The law of mind, Dhamma Niyama, Chitta Niyama, law of Dhamma and law of mind. Then there is this law of karma, karma niyama. And all this I can actually put to test. And I can actually realize them and understand them. That's why the faith becomes unshakable. Very different. Okay, we go on. I got 7 minutes left. Okay. For those who study... There's another paragraph up there. This one we have gone through. When you do good, you remember them. This one we finish. For those who study the Buddha Dhamma, every anniversary of the Buddha or Bodhisattva's birthday, Living Home Day, Enlightenment Day, or Nirvana, means your so-called Vesak, is an excellent time to make offering to the Triple Gem, as the meritorious virtue derived increases 7,000-fold. You believe or not? On the anniversary of Amitabha Buddha's birthday, a ceremony was performed to open the light in the image of Amitabha Buddha. The kata composed for the occasion said, Amitabha means limitless light. Today we open the light, limitless light. Limitless light illuminates limitless land. All living beings are limitlessly illuminated. when one gives to the Triple Gem on such a special day, in the eternal still bright land, Amitabha Buddha knows, a good and faithful disciple has made offering, and the donor will receive millions of times the normal merits and virtue for such timely gift. Those who have money can give money. Those who have strength can give strength. But one should not think about it. That is genuine giving. See, all this is trying to make you greedy, understand? Because you say, hey, if this is million times more meritorious, then why should I waste my time over the other 364 days? Correct? No? I wait for that day, I do so many million fold. You go and wait. When you don't have the understanding, if you do out of greed, you will never receive true merits. Because true merit is an understanding. When there is condition to do, when your faith is there very strong, when you have faith in the Buddha, in whatever wholesomeness that you have developed through your understanding and your wisdom, and you do it without mark, no mark of a self, no mark of living being, no mark of any Dhamma or merits to be received, that is true action, via understanding, via wisdom. That is the perfect cultivation. That's why Diamond Sutta is very different. Okay? So at least we finish chapter 4. So chapter 5, you go back and read. Chapter 5 is very interesting. Chapter 5, this one, you must develop the understanding. I read from the other notes. Chapter 5, Subhati, what do you think the Buddha asked? Can the Buddha be recognized by means of bodily form? What do you think? Is the Buddha the physical form that he take? That is not the real Buddha. That is the functional body that come to perform the function of a Buddha. Understand? That is the functional body of the Buddha. Like your five aggregate form in mind. That one is not you. That is the functional body for you to come to this world to perform the function of a living being or a human being or a bodhisattva or whatever. Okay? So that is the functional body. What is the Buddha? The Buddha is the embodiment of his perfection, his wisdom, his virtue, his compassion, and his cultivation. That is the real Buddha. That's why he said, he who sees the Dhamma sees the Buddha. His perfection is what? He has perfected the understanding of the Buddha Dhamma. He has complete wisdom, virtue, compassion, everything. That is the real Buddha. That's why he abolished the monk at that time. See? You think when you see the 32 hallmark and the minor characteristics, you see the Buddha. No, these are in the form. That's why the Diamond Sutta is very clear. Subhati answered, no, most honored one. The Buddha cannot be recognized by means of his bodily form. Then he asked, why? Because when the Buddha speaks of bodily form, it is not the real form, but only an illusion. The Buddha then spoke to Subhati, all that has a form is illusive and unreal. That's why form is unreal. But when I say that about 11 years ago, people use the Abhidhamma and challenge. He said, form is one of the four ultimate. How can it be unreal? Prajna Paramita. See? When people don't have understanding, they go and quote the sutta. Because their understanding is so limited and so different. Then they quote the sutta and use the Buddha's name, which is the highest authority, to challenge you. Understand? But I didn't know about it, luckily. Somebody else come and tell me later on. Okay, we go on. All that has a form is illusive and unreal. When you see that all forms are illusive and unreal, then you will begin to perceive your true Buddha nature. This is very important. You remember what I teach you all that? How to see form. The Heart Sutta all is written very clearly. How to see form. Then, how to see the unreality of form. Understand? Because form is condition arising. Then only you can see beyond form. Understand? If you don't know how to see form, you cannot see the condition arising. That's why when you can see form through the silent mind meditation, then you see that it is impermanent, condition arising, lead to suffering, empty, non-self. Then you see the unreality of form. Then only you can see beyond form. Then your mind will have wisdom. Then all this external form will not have any more power over you. That's why the external phenomenal world, they will collapse in front of you. Yeah. Because all these are mental form. Physical form, you need mind to cognize them, perceive them. That's why they become mental form and you bring into mind. That's why you return all of external form to mind. Then you see the unreality of mind, all the aggregate, impermanent, leading to suffering, empty. Then you start to see mind, the impermanent nature of mind. Then only you can see beyond mind, beyond thought, beyond time. Then only you can realize your true mind, your true nature, which is your Buddha nature. And this is what Chapter 5 of the Diamond Sutta is all about. But Xuanhua, they all cannot explain that. They just use this word. All that has form is elusive and unreal. It doesn't tell you much there. It tells you something, but not much. Elusive means what? Very elusive. Not easy to catch. Why? You must focus on the condition arising, unreality of form, like how I teach you all. I give you the analogy of the table. How does this table come to be? This table, how does it come to be? You need all the conditions for it to arise there. What are the conditions? You need the raw material. You need a carpenter. You need somebody to work on it, produce it, then put it on sale. Then N Chong bought it, then offered to me. Then it arises. All these are the conditions. Any of the conditions not there, this one ceases to be. That's why this one is impermanent, condition arising, unreal. And this one can disappear when condition ceases to be. Yes or not? When it's stolen, when I offer it, or when I decide to dispose it all, then it ceases to be. Yes or not? So when you start to understand the unreality of this, because it's condition arising, then you ask yourself, how do I know it's a table? How do I know it's a table? How do you know it's a table? Which aggregate? You perceive it through your thought, isn't it? What is this perception? It's just a mental image, isn't it? It's just an image, the formation in your brain, isn't it? This is just an image, understand? A perception, a mind state, a mental image. This is even more unreal than this physical thing, Karina. Externally, it's already condition arising, not real. Then when you perceive it through an image, it's even more unreal, understand? Then why do you cling onto it, grasp onto it, and give so much meaning to it? Like your physical body, like your car, your possession, everything. If you know that there are conditions arising, means when there is condition to have it, to own it, use it for the good of the many. Do not be deluded by it. Don't attach, cling and hold on to it and become miserable over it and go and argue and fight over it. That's why the Buddha say, for lay people, there are four types of happiness that can arise if you understand life. Even though it's impermanent, condition arising, phenomenal. But the reality is, in life, there can be happiness. So first type of happiness is what? First type of happiness is what? The Buddha said the happiness of possession. If you have known that you have already have the right livelihood that enable you to earn that wealth or that money or materialistic wealth, honestly, through the right way, without violating any karmic negativity. there is so much joy, understand? Happiness of possession, having your ability to own it through the right livelihood and right means. And this type of happiness can serve you well, because nobody can accuse you of anything, stealing or misappropriating or corruptly getting it. So you can be proud of what you have developed and earned. So happiness of possession. Then the second happiness is when you have the condition to receive all this, you must know how to make use of it for the happiness of yourself, your loved one, and all those that have affinity with you. So if you use it appropriately for your own benefit, comfort, happiness, your loved one and those who have affinity with you, or all of humanity, then there is a type of joy, a type of happiness that comes with this understanding that you are able to make a difference to your own life, your loved one's life, to those people whom you can help and make a difference to their life. Then there is the joy of giving, the generous heart. Then there is this joy of wholesomeness that you can arise and bring about so much what they call goodness to society and to people's life. Then the third type of happiness is when you can pay off all your debt, when you are free of debt. There is a type of happiness, a type of joy, when you are no longer burdened with any debt. Then the last happiness is, with this wealth, you can live a blameless life, so that the wise one will not blame you, so that you should not be like before, so petty and so stingy in your approach to life. You can be more generous. You can be more like understanding, to help more people, to avoid unnecessary conflict, misunderstanding, so that people won't say things behind you. The wise one will not blame you. So ability to live a blameless life is the last and the fourth type of happiness where a lay person can have, whereas the spiritual cultivator can have additional happiness, the happiness of a free mind, a liberated mind, the happiness of a calm, peaceful mind that has the heedfulness, the clarity to live life, to experience all of the wonders and beauty of life. So all this is possible, especially during the third phase of Dhamma, when you experience Pativeda. Okay, we will end. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits. Then after that, you can make your aspiration. Sharing our merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Transfer merits to departed one. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Let this merits accrue to our departed relatives and all those who can receive them, and may they all to be well and happy always. Okay, now we will invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasatu kalena sasa sampati hetu cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be peaceful and prosperous always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers be righteous. Okay, now you make your aspiration. Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya. By the grace of this merit that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one, until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and other worthy ones. Then we end.
Thank you.